Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball
with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
This is News Talk.
Hi there, folks. You're welcome along. So one of our football specials this evening, football all the way, in fact. We have a feature interview with Tony Pulis coming your way, former Stoke manager, amongst other things. We have Richard Dunne and David Myler chatting to Will O'Callaghan about the season's end. A crappy quiz as well, and more besides. Manchester United and Leicester currently 1-1. At Old Trafford, second half just getting started. 53106, the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, hello.
Hey, Joe.
Adrian Barry, good to have you with us. How you doing?
Evening, Joe. Richie, how you doing?
Mason Greenwood scoring this evening for Manchester United. Luke Thomas opened the goal scoring for Leicester, and then Mason Greenwood responded with now his eighth goal in his last 19 years of age. Manchester United's record Premier League scoring teenager. He's pipped Rooney, he's pipped Giggs. And after a tough season, there was the very, very sad death of his best friend. And Solskjaer, you remember, was talking about how his lifestyle maybe wasn't the best, and even things like getting enough sleep was an issue. After that dip, he has really rallied. This guy is going to be something so special. A few debutants for United this evening. Anthony Elanga, born in Sweden, 19 years of age. He's in midfield. Solskjaer has called him a goal-scoring winger with X Factor. And Amad Diallo, 18 years of age, who signed from Atalanta, not his debut, but he's starting this evening. Other than that, it's a so-so United side. Matic is playing, a few changes. Harry Maguire, obviously, injured. But that is where we are. Adrian, I bring almost a live update from St. Stephen's Green. I had half an hour to spare, so I thought I'd go out. You know, not always the case. We're often pretty busy. I thought I'd go out and sample the Dublin air, and Stephen's Green was a picture. 13 degrees Celsius, I checked.
Oof.
And quite a few men with tops off. They've said, to hell with this. It's May, 13 degrees. I can see the sun. It's been a long year. I'm taking my top off. Good on them, I say. I had three layers on, but they're going for it.
It's like that in February in the green sometimes, though, to be fair.
I was going to ask if you indulge, Joe, but we know you better than that. Yeah, listen, I think that anything goes now as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, not that anybody wants to see it, but you'd nearly be tempted yourself that, like, it's been a tough 14 months and whatever makes us feel a little bit more liberated.
Well, listen, they were liberated out there. They're having a good time. The green was full.
Did you get yourself an ice cream?
It's in the air. Got a smoothie, actually, if you're interested.
Nice. Yeah. Right. What flavour?
Yeah. I don't really know. It was a multivitamin booster type thing. It's just sugar at the end of the day, isn't it? That's all they are. I don't understand the science of that, by the way. If you have fruit, it's not so bad, but you stick it into a blender, something happens whereby it's not as good for you. That's the line, isn't it? Is that true?
Well, that was the downfall of the Nutribullet craze, wasn't it, a couple of years ago, that everybody was like, oh, this is amazing, it's green, and sure, look, it's got to be really good for you. And then somebody said, oh, there's something that happens when you turn on the blender that it creates some sort of, like, obviously, none of us in the line of work we're in are going to be science experts, but it appears that it's, full of sugar, I wasn't aware of, what natural sort of...
Yeah, fructose and all that business.
Fructose, yeah.
But I treated myself, what the hell. Tony Pulis on the way. Interesting career, Tony Pulis. So, born in Newport, South Wales, father a steelworker, so it was real, you know, steelworker, miner, down the docks kind of upbringing, and he had five brothers and sisters, so there were eight of them in the three-bed house. Basically, his parents took the box room, his sisters, two sisters took the main room, and the four lads all slept in the bed, and that was Tony Pulis's upbringing, which is a world away from the Premier League. So we recorded this chat earlier on. There's loads of good stuff in it, including, Adrian, he had no idea. He had no idea when he signed Rory Delap that Delap could throw the ball that long. It was basically the lads mucking around at training, and they were like, who can throw the ball to the far past the far post type thing? And they were all doing it and not doing very well. And then Delap, it's like a scene from a movie. Rory Delap took the ball, and flung it about 20 yards past the far post, and everyone stopped and said, what the hell is that? Yeah. And there was one year where one quarter of Stoke's Premier League goals came from Rory Delap throw-ins.
And nobody quite cottoned on to the fact this was happening. I can picture the movie scene where him and his assistant coach are sitting around going, listen, I got nothing. This shower, like, we're going down with this crowd. And then suddenly the camera swoops around and Rory Delap with this amazing throw. He is, like, such a fascinating and interesting character that gets often labelled with, like, that journeyman career. And, like, you mentioned a bit about his background there. And Newport is a tough, it's a hard town. It's an industrial town and wouldn't have flourished at all, even whenever, and it would have been a lot of Welsh towns that would have been in the same boat post the mining era falling around, falling to pieces. But so it's a tough area, and he's just such an interesting guy that, with an interesting story that just gets labelled with that. Like, I mean, I think Sam Allardyce, and maybe, you know, Big Sam obviously maybe does a little bit more to feed into the stereotype, but I never relegated Joe, am I right? Mm-hmm. Is that a Tony Pulis stat? Yeah. Like that in itself. He's out of work, obviously, at the minute, is he?
He is, yeah. I'd lost track a little bit as well, I must say. So, I mean, as you said, he was at Stoke 07 to 2013, and he doesn't bear any ill will towards the ending there. You know, he just felt it reached a natural conclusion. He'll talk later on. He could sense as the years went by, once upon a time, the Britannia was bouncing with it, like a 1-0 win over Aston Villa. And then, you know, a couple of years of being Premier League mainstays, they're sort of crossing their arms a bit more, saying, well, what's next, Tony? I mean, are we going to get to the Champions League? You know, kind of a vibe, but he bears no ill will. He obviously left Stoke then 13. A miracle job at Crystal Palace 2014. He was given Premier League Manager of the Season in 14. Then he went on to West Brom. Most recently, and this is just football madness these days, blinked and you would have missed this. Basically, he was Sheffield Wednesday manager in the Championship, appointed last November, and was given 10 games and sacked. He was Sheffield Wednesday manager for November and December and sacked. So I think he's happy enough now. He's 63, still fit as a fiddle, probably looking to get back into the game. I don't know, there might be a sense maybe in the Premier League, certainly, that his type of football isn't going to cut it anymore, you know? Like, all the teams now are splitting the centre-halves and playing out from the back, and they're less fewer disruptors than there were.
Still think, Joe, you'd be nearly surprised at a club like Fulham, like, that's all fine, right? Like, the new style of football and, you know, the 52 sections of the pitch is all well and good until you're, like, 20 points adrift at the bottom at Christmas. And you'll have plenty of jittery owners who, with, you know, somebody with a proven track record, the football, you know, there is a point where the Stoke City fans stop, you know, they're no longer sort of crying out for Champions League football, they're crying for survival. Mm. And, you know, everybody can be... a bit more accepting of a particular style of football, which he would obviously be fairly well renowned for. Mm. So he will get work. I'm sort of surprised that it hasn't probably happened for him this year, but he will get work. There'll be plenty of owners, I would think, that'll be dialed into somebody like him who can, as they say, do a job for them, Joe.
Yeah, I would think probably Championship level next, and a team that start next season badly and need to get someone in, they'll either call Big Sam or Tony Pulis, I would think.
That's where things are as regards those sides, because and those managers, and we've seen it with Mick McCarthy, it's Championship sides are in trouble bringing in those kind of stoic managers now rather than Premier League sides that are in trouble. And you just have to look at what's actually got promoted from the Championship over the last couple of years. The likes of Daniel Farke has obviously gotten Norwich promoted twice, playing pretty attractive football. Thomas Frank at Brentford has had them thereabouts playing attractive football. Frank Lampard nearly got Derby up a couple of years ago playing attractive football. It's not necessarily the Hoofers and Cloggers League and the war of attrition that it was before. There's a lot of games involved, but people are being a lot more canny in how they're approached. And I don't think those upper echelon Championship gigs are open to people who will be playing a slightly more agricultural kind of football, I guess you call it, if you're being unkind.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has changed last 5-6 years for sure. But he's really good. There's loads of good stuff. I think we'll start playing it from about 8:30 or so. Arsene Wenger wrote to the FA complaining about the length of the grass at Britannia. He's disgusted. The pitch is too narrow, the grass too long. I know what they're doing. You need to stop them. And obviously they were
I remember watching a few games with Stoke playing at home, and you could legitimately see that the pitch had been narrowed. And it's like, it's wonderful little bits and pieces like that I think are actually being lot from the game. And they're fun. Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, they're fun and they're a bit of nonsense and they're a bit of silliness and they're really amateur era head games. Yeah. But they're
is there anything more arse, by the way, getting distracted by that nonsense?
I know.
Like, there's literally, even now, like maybe more so now.
Yeah. No, I know. Talk about psychologically showing yourself up as weak to be complaining to the FA. It's like running to mom and dad and saying, oh, he's breaking the rules. And and the FA said they're obeying the regulations.
Go to one of the other chumps in the league and say, geez, you see what Stokes is? You really should get a complaint in there. Mm. Like, not like a club like Arsenal.
Well, and sorry, this is the last, I don't want to spoil the whole interview, but on that theme, Pulis on getting Stoke promoted called Alex Ferguson and just said, look, we've never spoken. Any advice? And Ferguson said, yeah, look, I've had a look at your team and players you'll get in. Realistically, you're not going to win money away from home. My advice to you would be to make the Britannia hell on earth to go to. Make it miserable for other teams to go to. If anyone in the top six is complimenting you as a team and patronising you, you're doing something wrong. You need to make it awful. And Pulis said, that sounds like a good plan. And boy, did he deliver. So he's on the way. There's a few texts in. If I was in a group and one of my mates took off his top, I would go home. No goodbye. I would just sit up and leave and never speak to those people again. Well, Stephen's Green is full of it at the moment and they're enjoying life. Good on them. We have an update from a listener on Blendergate.
What?
Richard says, and he sounds convincing here, the problem with the blender is that it shreds the fibres and in turn makes slow release, i.e. good carb, into fast release, i.e. bad carb. In other words, it makes it close to liquid sugar. Just eat the fruit, says Richard. Does that apply to veg? I try and get veg into me courtesy of a blender, I have to say. It doesn't taste especially nice. The fact it doesn't taste nice makes me hopeful, but I'm open to correction. Anyway,
you're asking Richard there, not us, Joe.
I was more so putting that to Richard, the texter. He knows what he's talking about. Or else I'll just Google it.
Similar principle at work, to be fair.
Eating the fruit, by the way, is just not, it's just not like, I mean, what, you're going to sit down and eat two apples and a pear and an orange in one sitting. It's just not happening. Like.
No. The news round and off the ball on News Talk with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. I mentioned the live football at the outset, Richie. So we're at 55 minutes now. Still 1-1 at Old Trafford, Rich.
Yeah, into the second half there, 55, 56 minutes on the clock at Old Trafford. Manchester United won, Leicester won the score. 19-year-old Luke Thomas gave the visitors an early lead with Mason Greenwood equalising just 5 minutes later. As we know, a Leicester City win tonight would see Manchester City crown Premier League champions for the third time in four seasons. A United victory, though, could open the door for Liverpool in the race for Champions League football. Liverpool, of course, visiting in under 48 hours' time, too. There's no Harry Maguire tonight for United. His enforced absence, one of 10 changes from Sunday's win at Aston Villa. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer revealed Maguire sustained ankle ligament damage in a challenge with Anwar El Ghazi on Sunday. The United boss hopes Maguire will be fit for the Europa League final with Villarreal in a fortnight's time, but arriving on crutches this evening with his left leg in a protective boot, Maguire realistically is in a race to be fit for Euro 2020. There's one more game tonight, albeit lacking in similar significance. Southampton's safety was confirmed last night with Fulham's relegation to the Championship confirmed. Ralph Hasenhuttl's side welcome Crystal Palace to St Mary's and kickoff there is at 8:15.
Now, Richard Keogh versus Derby County has been resolved.
It has, and Keogh has been awarded in the region of €2.7 million, £2.3 million, in a wrongful dismissal case taken against Derby County. The former Republic of Ireland defender was involved in a car crash with teammates Tom Lawrence and Mason Bennett in September 2019. A month later, Keogh was sacked for not agreeing to drastically reduce terms at Pride Park. An EFL panel has found in favour of the 34-year-old, who's now at Huddersfield, who will have the remainder of his contract paid up by Derby pending appeal. So €2.7 million winging its way to the bank account of Richard Keogh.
Well, it's a huge win for him. I mean, I always felt it seemed like he'd been so harshly treated compared to the other two players involved, and it seemed like it was down to his age, frankly. And just to jog your memory, reading here, the Irish Times have a reminder of the situation. The car crash happened after a team bonding day, so Lawrence and Bennett, you mentioned. Lawrence was over the drink drive limit, so was Mason Bennett, who had driven off ahead. When Bennett stopped his car at a giveaway line, Lawrence went into the back of him before careering into the lamppost. They both fled the scene and they left Richard Keogh unconscious in the back seat. So Lawrence and Bennett admitted drink driving and failing to stop at the scene of an accident when they appeared at a Derby magistrate's court. They avoided jail time, blah, 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 180 hours service as well. Despite their criminal convictions, Derby chose not to sack them, although they did fine them. Keogh, though, ends up being hit for like massive pay cut and then he refused and so they sack him. I mean, on the face of it, Adrian, Richard Keogh had a fairly watertight case. I mean, sitting in the back seat of a car, like, geez, the hearing committee today said that he absolutely hadn't brought the club into disrepute. Mm. He hadn't breached his contract. He hadn't done any of the things they were accusing him of and had been wrongly dismissed by the club.
Definitely felt at the time that he was being scapegoated at that stage, and he had such standing at the club as well. Was he captain at that time, or had
club
been
captain,
up to,
yeah.
at that time?
Essentially why they brought the decision against him, because they felt that his role as club captain meant that he shouldn't have been involved in something like that, and that effectively his increased role at the club meant that he had brought them into disrepute. Mm.
I wonder if he was 23 and their star player, would they have felt that?
Yeah, totally. Look, in football's conscience, Joe, that's what you're suggesting there, and we've seen plenty of evidence of that. But it felt, my recollection of it at the time was that they moved very swiftly on it. I mean, what I'm suggesting is too swiftly. And like, when that sort of stuff goes to the state, that can look great for optics at the time, because they could be, you know, telling all and sundry that we're outraged by this and we're going to take swift action. But when it finds its way to a court of law, they'll be looking for due process. And if the action was that swift, you know, it might suggest.
Are you gone?
Hello? Adrian gone, is he?
I think he's gone. We might get him back.
That was me.
Well, he was winding up his point there, but Richard Keogh, €2.7 million for wrongful dismissal. I would think Richard Keogh, the Keogh household may have a wee toast of champagne this evening, just to put that one behind them. So still 1-1 at Old Trafford, 59 minutes on the clock. Now, the camogie season has been sorted out.
Yeah, strike action among Inverkenny players in the camogie season has been averted. 53% of club players polled have voted in favour of a split season. It means the Littlewoods Ireland National Camogie League can commence as planned this coming weekend. That will be followed by the All-Ireland Championships, with the club championships closing out the year. Players had been unhappy with a proposal to sandwich the club season between the two inter-county competitions. Just 62% actually of those clubs sent out the poll returned them, with 53%, as I mentioned, voting in favour of that split season proposal.
Rich, Adrian, you're back with us, aren't you?
Yes, I'm joining.
Yeah, you did a piece on this, I know, last week. So the plan initially had been to do inter-county league, then club championship, then inter-county championship. Mm. And I got that was a bit messy. I did think there maybe was something in the Camogie Association's rationale, i.e. the club player has not played in an awful long time, not since last maybe August. And if we're to push the club championship back behind the inter-county season altogether, then we're asking the club players across the country not to get any championship hurling in basically a year. And I just wonder, like, the GPA have been to the fore on this. They obviously represent the elite player. Is the club player being looked after here?
Well, I think that the if it was just the camogie players alone that they were looking after, that plan might have made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of intercounty female players around the country are also dual players. I know that Jimmy Greville, the Cavan manager, had spoken out last week, and he was saying that a lot of his players fell into that category. And that's where the complication hit. Sarah Donovan was the Dublin coach that we spoke to on OTB AM last Friday morning, and she was talking about that they were, I can't remember, maybe 13 or 14 weeks into what would have been obviously the vast majority of which, even up to that point, was like a personal training thing. Obviously, you couldn't have done anything group, but they were doing that up to 5 days a week. So that was 13 to 14 weeks at that stage. Then she was saying they would have been in with the squad, Dublin squad at that point, for 2 weeks, and in camp then for the next 7 weeks to the league final at the end of June, back then for club championship after that, and then after that back in September when the county championship would begin, mm-hmm. which amounts to 45 weeks of commitment.
And was there a logic, I guess COVID disrupted everything, but was there a logic in putting the club player first here and then doing inter-county on the far side? I know they had started their inter-county training. I'm just wondering how the club player is being looked after here now.
I my sense of it, Joe, is that there probably was sense to the plan from a strictly camogie point of view, but once you put the LGFA into the mix as well, and there's obviously a lot of chat at the minute about a potential merger there, which would probably rule a lot of this stuff out, it just made it impossible. You had look at the stuff that's come through, maybe even over the last over the course of today, in terms of the reaction to it, and the engagement of clubs from it. Just reading through some of the detail that came through earlier on, they were saying that 62% of clubs was represented the total response from the Camogie Association poll.
Okay, so the clubs were in favour as well.
They were in favour, but only really just. So that was 62%. Yeah, 62% of the total clubs that voted for it. So two-thirds represents to me a very low engagement rate.
Oh, as in, now, sorry, I misunderstood the point. So a third of clubs didn't even bother voting.
Exactly. Of that 62%, and my tiny mind can just about get around this one, but of that 62%, 53% voted for it. So just over half. But right. I mean, you can think about obviously the 38% who didn't vote and how it may very easily have gone the other way. But you know, I think when you look at the issues that Camogie have, I think, like, look, maybe there was a reason that club players were not as engaged by it, in that, like, it was obviously only partially affecting them. But I mean, an issue of obviously such significant national importance that they didn't feel as if, you know, you would have only picked up any newspaper over the last 10 days, turn on a radio station. Like, it's been a hot topic of conversation that, you know, a third of members felt that they just couldn't be bothered voting in. Like, I think that
there's a disconnect there of some kind.
There is. There's a lot of issues, I think, for the Camogie Association to get into, and for Sinead McNulty to get into. And I think that, I do think, by the way, I think that they should be praised for pressing pause. Like, there could have been a sense 10 days ago when it was mooted to begin with, and there was obviously a bad reaction. They could, and we've seen before, like, just sort of with different sports and associations, bullheadedly obviously pressed ahead with it, and that would have been a total disaster.
Yeah.
At least, fair play, they pressed pause and they
big
took
time.
Counsel on it.
No, I think the Camogie Association deserve huge credit for listening and for changing around. I just hope that the people doing the loudest talking were thinking of the club players as well. That's why I was just asking you, and the club player may well be being looked after here as well, but they're waiting a long time now for championship is the only slight issue, and obviously there are a lot more club players than county players. It's something we might tease out again. Obviously, there's no club players association in the women's game at the moment, or certainly not a high-profile one. Rich, where are we going next?
We'll go to Old Trafford, actually. We'll get an update from that Manchester United-Leicester game. Here's Peter Smith.
Manchester United 1, Leicester 1. Both teams have major finals to contest in the coming days. And you sense that possibly minds and priorities could lay elsewhere, with a distinctly end-of-season flavour to this game. Leicester still have a top-four position to secure, but they haven't really set about their much-changed opponents. Defensively, they had to be alert to some good movement from Greenwood and Elanga, but it stays Manchester United 1, Leicester 1.
OK, where are we going next, Rich?
To Munster, they say that Orji Snyman is in good spirits, having undergone successful surgery last week. The South African lock hasn't played since August, when he suffered an ACL injury on his debut appearance against Leinster. Snyman required a procedure on a separate knee problem, having suffered a setback in his recovery. While sticking with rugby, Ulster scrum half John Cooney is going to miss Friday's Rainbow Cup game with Leinster at the RDS. He suffered a neck injury in the recent Challenge Cup defeat to Leicester. Marcus Ray sustained a concussion in last week's loss to Munster and is following the return to play protocols. Kieran Treadwell picked up an ankle injury in training, and he'll also miss the trip to Ball's Bridge.
Just as we speak, Leicester have scored a second. Calgar Soyuncu from a corner header at the back post, 66 minutes gone. Manchester United 1, Leicester 2. As things stand, Man City win the title this evening officially, 66 minutes gone in that game. So RNA, there's going to be fans at the Open, no surprise.
Yeah, a significant number of spectators, they're saying, are expected to attend the summer's Open Championship. RNA Chief Exec Martin Slumbers confirmed the news today. From May 17th, that's Monday, 10,000 spectators are allowed to attend outdoor sporting events in England. When the Open last visited Royal St George's, 180,000 fans were in attendance across the week. Shane Lowry will be defending the Claret Jug, of course, at Sandwich.
Somebody's texting to say, hipster warning, to retain the goodness in your juices, what you need is a slow juicer, apparently. So that's what somebody is saying. Dan Martin.
Got to retain the goodness in your juice, Joe. Dan Martin's 21st on general classification after today's fourth stage of the Giro d'Italia. The Irish rider finished a minute and 48 seconds, pardon me, behind today's stage winner, Joe Dombrowski. Alessandro De Marchi has taken the pink jersey from his compatriot, Filippo Ganna. And the FAI has confirmed three friendly matches for the Republic of Ireland under-21s. They'll all be in Spain this summer. Jim Crawford's side are going to take on Switzerland on May 30th. They'll then face Australia's Olympic team on June the 2nd before taking on Denmark 3 days later on June the 5th. The camp fully takes place in Marbella.
And just last one, Spurs are introducing a club advisory panel.
Yeah, it's going to allow fans sit on the Tottenham board. Spurs, one of the 12 teams to join the controversial Super League recently, only to withdraw following a backlash from supporters. Tottenham say they wholeheartedly regret the decision to join the European Super League and feel the representation on the board would ensure fans are at the heart of club decision making.
We'll wait and see, Adrian.
Sorry, I was struggling to keep in the laugh as I was reading that. Tottenham, like, they were good. They were really upset that they were part of the Super League. Do me a favour.
I just love the thought now of Daniel Levy turning to the fans saying, what do you think?
I mean, these are all good ideas that have come off the back of it in terms of like more engagement with the fans. That can't be a bad thing, even if it's been done for, I don't know if cynical is the right word, but
Yeah, it is.
Dubious enough reasons. But it can't be a bad thing. You just like, you know, maybe at some point before you launched into the Super League, if you were genuine about it, you might have done that.
Well, there'll now be the board meetings with the quote-unquote fan group there, and then there'll be the actual board meetings when they show the fan group out. Thanks, no, that was great. Yeah, great. We'll see you again in a month.
Like, we're nearly finished here anyway. This is pretty much done. We've kind of covered everything.
Fellas, we are pretty much out of time. Thank you very much. Adrian Barry, cheers.
Thanks, Joe.
Richie, thank you.
Mind yourself, lads.
So we have Tony Pulis on the way. We have Will O'Callaghan talking to Richard Dunn and David Myler. And up next, a crappy quiz special. Tommy Jair and Nathan going head-to-head.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
The OTB Podcast Network.